Alrighty then, welcome to the Word Warren. I'm your host, Sarah.
You introduced yourself first!
Okay, we're sans Justin today, so we have with us Hannah.
Boop boop, so we're on the controls.
And special guest, Leah.
I'm here!
Yay, Leah! We're happy to have you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
This will be our first episode in the new format.
Yeah.
We're going to start broadening our horizons out to new and fun pop culture.
Today you could say we're boldly going where we haven't gone before.
Yeah. Perfect.
And
so we're going to talk about sci-fi in general, but more specifically also about Star Trek, because there's a lot of overlap in different kinds of media. And that's kind of fun.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. I mean, we are first and foremost a book podcast.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. But you really, in like today's culture and stuff, you can't really talk about books without talking about pop culture to an extent.
Exactly. Yeah. Without at least mentioning some of the other forms of media.
Because books have become so prevalent in everything. Mm-hmm. Everything is based off a book. Everything is based off of a movie
that comes out.
I mean, quite literally everything is based off of storytelling. It's so true. Whatever.
Exactly. So yeah. I have not personally myself like read any of the novels of Star Trek, so that's why we brought Leah here, because she's read some.
Yeah,
I have.
Yeah.
She also knows a bunch about Star Trek.
And so. I'm just the odd man out that's like, yeah, I know a little bit about Star Trek. I know about the red shirts and Captain Picard.
Oh my gosh, I forgot to put it in my notes, but one of the clues on Jeopardy last week was about a John Scalzi book that is like a parody of the Star Trek
stuff. Yes. I have rented that book from the library several times, and I have yet to read it.
I saw an Instagram post of that Jeopardy question, and I couldn't believe that it was an actual Jeopardy question. Right? Like, I thought it was just a silly meme, and then somebody was like, no, this was the actual question, and I was like, that's the stupidest Jeopardy question that I've ever seen.
Oh my god, that's amazing.
Who doesn't know that?
Exactly.
The answer was red shirts, if anybody was curious.
Know what the answer is. Yep, it's red
shirts. I suppose the answer was, what is red shirts?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, come on now. Keep with the format.
Gotta keep the correct format or you can't win.
Exactly.
No points.
Yes, exactly. So, all right. So, I did most of my research about books. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I can't remember, when did Star Trek first air?
1967.
Okay.
First. Jeez. Okay. Just like Leah, we're just gonna quiz you.
Yeah.
We're gonna see how much of a fan you actually are.
I know, right? Yeah, I gotta
stand your toe.
Prove myself here.
So that's actually interesting, because in my research, the very first original novel of Star Trek was a book called Mission to Herodotus. It was published in 1968.
Oh, okay.
So like the first original was actually pretty quickly after.
Well, it was called Mission to.
It was called Mission to Herodotus.
Okay.
By Mac Reynolds, and it was published by Whitman Books in 1968.
So
they wasted no time getting in on that.
Yeah, okay, so really did. So did Star Trek start as a TV show and then get serialized into novel format?
Right. Yes. Yep.
Okay, so it's like backwards from the standard.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's really cool.
Yes,
I like really that fun. A lot, actually.
Right? It was so popular, and the reason why it got so many novels, honestly, was because of the fans writing fanzines. And so all these fanzines were coming out, obviously the publishers kind of knew a little bit about it beforehand, but then that's where they like did relaunch series so that it was a continuing story after the end of the show, but in novel form, because they couldn't afford the budget, you know, because they were canceled or whatever. So they did these relaunch series that would let you keep reading about your favorite characters.
Yeah, because it seemed like that was kind of a one-off deal, too, because it wasn't until after the cancellation that the majority of the publishing happened anyway. But so that was just like a kind of a thing that,
That's really cool.
Yeah.
I never realized that it was TV first, then books.
And then
like,
books.
I just assume everything's always, it was a book, and then they were like, let's make a TV show about it.
Right.
So the first major publications, like aside from that original novel back then, was a guy named James Blish, who was already like a pretty prominent sci-fi fantasy author in his own right. He started doing adaptations of the episodes into book forms. Those ones were all published by Bantam Books. And it says he did 12 volumes of them, so I don't think he did all episodes, but...
Well, because the volumes were sometimes multiple episodes put together into a novel form, because it was like Star Trek Log One or whatever. But honestly, I'm not even that sure. Maybe they aren't multiple, because I've never read any of James Blish's ones. Mm-hmm. So
letting us down, man.
I know, right?
Although, fun fact that I read up when I was reading about James Blish is he is the... credited with creating the term gas giant when referring to a large planetary body.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Weird. I thought that was fun.
I love this stuff. I like that that's just like something that he created that now we use in science.
In science, right?
I mean, you got like Asimov's laws of robotics that we use in science. Mm-hmm. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and there's like a lots of, obviously, I mean, I have in my later notes about like a lot of like stuff that was inspired by Star Trek specifically, but like even just in science fiction in general, like stuff that's become mobile phones or basically because of Star Trek.
Oh, yeah, like the little, yeah. little communicators. Little
communicators yeah. and all that, so.
Well, I mean, Star Trek, I feel like Star Trek really did a lot for the science fiction mm-hmm. genre and just our general view of technology mm-hmm. and things mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah, yes. yeah.
I wonder who was the first person to use warp drive. Wouldn't surprise me if it was Star Trek, but I don't know that for sure.
I know, right? I don't know. Yeah, yeah. I would be curious to find out. I didn't look that one up specifically. Although when the first major push to create a vaccine for COVID-19 was called Project Warp Drive, because the main scientist who was working on it was a huge Star Trek fan.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Lovely.
Right. Nerds are so great.
Nerds are so great. Right. I think the thing about Star Trek and it, like in general that I really love is it is a prime example in literature and TV about how much the fandom can influence the genre.
Yes.
And like force publishers to either continue shows or make new content or mm-hmm. whatever, because mm-hmm. yeah. Star Trek almost got benched a bunch.
A lot. Yeah.
A ton.
They were like, people don't, this is weird propaganda stuff about utopia and the anti-war stuff. And like, we don't want this on TV. And then everyone was like,
yes, we do.
We do though.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's also one of the, it's very rare that a show will get a second pilot episode, which is what happened with Star Trek.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know it had two pilot episodes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was one like years after?
No, it was like Gene Roddenberry created this pilot. They were like, well, we like the idea, but we don't like these things. But it was like, yeah, it was like a little too forward because they had it was like the first mate was a woman in the pilot episode.
God forbid have a woman.
Yeah.
Be second in command.
Be second in command. No. So they were like, you gotta get rid of the woman, basically. Like, and
that's a woman on a spaceship? That's unbelievable.
Yeah. Absolutely unbelievable.
I mean, women can't even ride trains.
Yes, exactly.
Their uteruses will fall straight out. That's my favorite thing ever.
Oh my god.
Oh my goodness.
My favorite bit of like nonsense historical lore is just when they made passenger trains first, they were like, women shouldn't ride these. Their uteruses might fall out.
Oh my gosh. Wow. I had no idea.
It's because they can't handle moving too fast, you know?
Yeah. No.
Right.
They're not built like men.
Not built like God.
Oh no.
So warp drive is out.
Warp drive is straight out. Like obviously.
Too fast.
Way too fast.
Yeah.
Oh my god, that's brilliant. But yeah. It's brilliantly stupid, but
so yeah.
I can't say so much.
So much. But anyway.
Anyway, okay, so then they just had to remake the pilot episode.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad the show exists, but
yeah, but, and see, it's like one of those things where it's like, I've watched the original pilot episode. It's great. Like, I like Captain Pike. He's cool.
Oh, yeah, they changed Captain.
But they changed captains. Yeah. And you got a better, more diverse group in the...
Okay.
Because you have Uhura and you have Chekov and Sulu, which were not in the first one.
Okay. Well, and that so makes me happy. Yeah. Like, they're like, let's recast. And that works.
Yeah,
because Chekov and Sulu... Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yes. So good. So, yeah, they were... And that's one of the mainstays of the genre in general is, like, because they were, like, very... I mean, much better than that, more recently even, but in the original, you know, series, you had a Japanese helmsman, a Russian weapons officer, a black woman that was the communications officer, and
So. Well, and, like, that was part of the, like, quote, political mindedness of the show, was this world peace utopia, and the only reason that humanity was able to reach the stars and become explorers in space was because they had achieved, like, utopia on their planet.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And so it makes sense that it's a more diverse cast. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Which, you know, in the 60s, was you don't see that kind of stuff, especially because the Russians were always the bad guys.
Yes, exactly. So the fact that it was the guy that was in charge of their weapons system, too, is also and he's just so funny.
And it's so wonderful how when people think of Star Trek, yes, they think of Kirk and Spock and McCoy, because they are the main characters, technically. But they also think of Uhura and Scotty and Sulu and Chekov, but those people were only in half the episodes.
Yeah.
Like,
it's so interesting to look at them, because you, like, identify immediately those characters. Yeah. But if you, like, look on IMDb, they always tell you the number of episodes each character is in. So there was a total, like, 70 something episodes.
Yeah, it was like 78 or something.
And I think Uhura was the highest ranking, like, one after that. And she was only in 39 of them.
Wow.
But yet, you vividly think, as soon as you think Star Trek, you think Uhura.
Yeah.
Like,
absolutely.
Yeah. So, and they really were good at making, like, the secondary characters still, like, interesting enough, too, which is also something you don't really see a lot today in television.
Honestly.
Yeah. Like,
you really don't. Like, your secondary characters usually aren't as important or have nearly as much backstory or substance as your main characters, because, like, oh, people have goldfish attention spans. Why would we want to put too many characters on the screen?
Yeah. Why? I'll tell you why, because it's awesome.
It's great. It's awesome.
It's how you tell a good story.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's been, obviously, they continue to publish Star Trek novels into now, and they're even the most recent, like, publications where Random House published a series of little golden books that are all Star Trek.
Oh, my gosh.
So they have the Star Trek alphabet book, which is adorable.
I didn't know that.
Random House. Yeah. And they have Too Many Tribbles, and then I Am Captain Kirk, and I Am Mr. Spock. Those are the four, like, little golden books. I know. Too Many Tribbles is so cute. Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
The little alphabet book is adorable, because it's like, A is for alien, C is for captain. It's like, oh my God, it's so cute.
That's adorable. Well, and that's one of those things that I had no idea about that. And then I was starting to do research on this, because I've looked up, like, so many Star Trek novels trying to figure out which ones I want to read or whatever, or if I even want to read any of them. And I had no idea that they published Star Trek manga. Like, there's only four published Star Trek manga, not mangas, but I'm like, what?
You learn something new every day, right?
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like manga is becoming a more and more popular genre. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember being in high school and not being able to find manga Barnes & Noble had the tiniest half an aisle, like, section of manga.
Yeah. Right.
And now it's, like, a whole, like, quarter of the store. Yeah, I mean,
people.
It just exploded recently,
Yeah. It got so popular so fast.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, where was this when I was in high school trying to find all these manga?
Seriously.
Yeah. And then, I mean, speaking of manga, because they've pretty much almost continuously since 1967 have been releasing comics.
Oh yeah,
for the Star Trek book, and by all the major publishers, Marvel, DC, IDW, Wildstorm had one, you know, and a ton of other, like, smaller publications have done other series of the thing. But
it's one of those weird things that, like, I think happens with, like, specifically with Star Trek, because I'm gonna talk about fan fiction right now. Okay,
yeah,
because, like, the reason it's so popular and why it's so prevalent to have novels is because, I mean, fan fiction started with Star Trek. Star Trek was the first fan fiction. Like, the fanzines that people published, the, like...
Oh, she's gonna...
Do you want me to mention?
No. People have been writing fan fiction forever.
I mean, true. That's true.
I will give you that, like, Star Trek is probably the first, like, really recognized version of fan fiction, but I was like, have you read Dante's Inferno?
Oh, true, no, I have not.
Because Dante's Inferno is just Dante's self-insert fan fiction of the Bible.
Oh, okay. No, that's true. That's fair. That is fair. Actually, you know, I even was reading about that. I was like, yeah.
And then, like, a lot of Greek mythology and lore, like, stories that come out of Greece are, like, Greek fan fiction of other Greek stories But I digress.
Yeah.
I guess in the modern popular culture.
Popular culture. I'll never stop screaming about Dante, though.
No, okay, yes.
I love it. It's high literature, but it's just fan fiction.
Okay. Because, you know, you learn stuff every day. It's like, I mean... Honestly, I've literally, like, only started reading fan fiction recently, so it's, like, not even...
That's but, fair. That's like, fair. Fan fiction's amazing, though. I mean, though. Yeah. I hate people that are so anti-fan fiction for stuff. They're like, I hate fan fiction. I'm like, why? It's just more content of the things you love. Like, yeah, some of it is horribly written.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Yes.
But a lot of it is really good.
Yeah.
And, like, who cares if it's badly written? I want to read about my favorite characters. They didn't get enough screen time, and I like to list. I like to read about
them. Exactly. Yeah.
But what if they owned a coffee shop?
What if they owned a coffee shop? Exactly. So dumb, and I love it.
What if they were 1940s detectives?
I don't even know.
Right? What if they were in a parallel universe where they were in Star Wars and instead.
Yes. Amazing.
Captain Kirk leads the Enterprise through a wormhole and ends up in Star Wars. They destroy the Sith.
Oh my god. I read a really good Star Trek fan fiction that was, what if they were in Firefly universe?
I would love that.
That's great.
What?
Yeah. That's great.
Or like, I mean, Farscape.
I mean, Farscape.
Farscape.
Oh my gosh. So much.
Oh my gosh.
Most brilliant sci-fi show that's ever. Because we were just talking about this actually last night. That I think Star Trek could do with more puppets in their show.
I feel like a lot of shows would benefit from more puppets.
Right? I mean, really.
I think that they could.
Yeah.
I think every show could benefit.
Give me weird eight-armed aliens and like praying mantis people or something. Like, come on.
Listen, just tap Del Toro for that.
Right?
Oh my gosh.
And get like the scariest puppets ever and have the coolest aliens on any sci-fi show.
Oh my god. So good.
Either that or lean the entire other direction and just do Muppets, but really lean into it.
But really lean into it. You gotta,
Just
don't address it. Just go in.
It's just Grover, but just 100% it's an alien.
Yes.
It's just like Grover with little, like a headband with antennas.
Oh my god. Yes.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I have to, since Sarah brought up the puppets, I'm going to talk about a series of books that I've been reading called the Ronsu series, which is about the Romulans. And it's like from their perspective.
Yeah.
And that's like, it's really good. I like it, but it's half Captain Kirk, half this Romulan commander, and that they're like sort of allies, sort of like frenemies, like thing that's going on with them. Like,
we were just talking about fan fiction, so my brain just went enemies to lovers. Yes.
I know, right? Yeah,
clandestine romance.
Yes.
Oh, and I mean, I'm gonna let you go back to your thing, but that was one of the things about the novels of Star Trek too, is that they were so popular and people publish them so quickly that a lot of the content that's in there are like stuff that the author like just is not canon to the series, because you could just write a Star Trek novel and extrapolate whatever you want. So like there's a bunch of like Star Trek novels that are about like the Klingons, where the Klingons are not like a warrior race. They're like really, they're just really like competitive or whatever. Yeah. Like they just want to be the best at everything.
I love that.
And it's like, so somebody thought of that for them, but then later in Next Generation, when they explored the Klingons more fully, they changed the thing about it. So it's like those books are no longer canon, but they're like really fun and interesting to read and stuff like that.
Which I mean, because Verhansu is also, Diane Duane wrote the books and she made everything up about the Romulans. And little of it is in the later shows that she like made up a whole language for them and this whole society. And it's very little of it is in the like Next Generation when we actually fight the Romulans right, and stuff like that. And so yeah,
it's kind of, that's almost sad.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
like so much effort went into that, and it sounds like a really good book. Mm-hmm. Like make that canon, man.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Use the material that people are just literally handing to you.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. But the thing I was going to talk about with the show, the books, is because there are some really interesting aliens that Diane made up for this series that you've never seen on television, because you would never be able to, because one of them is she's a crystal. She's a living crystal. And she has like 8 legs, and she tinkles when she walks. Oh,
I love her.
Yeah, right? She's amazing.
Sounds awesome.
Like
that's great.
That's a great opportunity for a puppet.
Yes,
exactly.
So and there's like yeah, so there's just like so much more stuff in the novels. You know, I say that having never read them, but like it sounds like you can explore so much more with novels than you can like capture on film and stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's like really cool.
Well, and then you have the bridging of the gap between the two, where mm-hmm. you have the graphic novels.
Right.
Yes.
Where you can explore, you can't quite get as much dynamics as you can in a film,
mm-hmm.
but you can explore a lot more with a graphic novel, because that's then true. You can draw the 8-legged crystal creature that you maybe don't have the technology or want of use of puppets to put on your show.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's, the graphic novel. I should get into the graphic novels more because I reading them and I'm just like, this entity sounds amazing. I don't know if my imagination is doing it justice. I want to see somebody draw it.
I mean, there's also no guarantee that the graphic novels.
I mean, that is true.
I mean, I feel like the graphic novels are where like we have a void.
Mm-hmm. Like, oh yeah,
I haven't really read them. Yeah. I've seen them, and I'm like, oh look, of course they make Star Trek graphic novels. Of course they do. But I've never picked one up.
Yeah.
I have so many other things that I want to pick up.
I know, right? I did pick up, it was a one-shot comic. It was the Mirror Universe Voyager.
Ooh.
Because they never did a Mirror Universe. Well, actually, Voyager and Next Generation never did Mirror Universe episodes, which was, and see, this is the thing, is it was one episode of the original series that where they went to the Mirror Universe and Spock had a goatee and they were evil or whatever. And then like Deep Space Nine did like 8 episodes of it because they were just like, I freaking love this concept.
They were like totally enamored of it.
I mean, I'm kind of a sucker for like Mirror Universe stuff. Like, like your shadow clone.
Yes. Right.
Like, yes.
Yeah.
Show us the polar opposite of this character.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so the comic book did it was a one shot. So it's kind of sucky because it's just a little flimsy little comic book of Voyager as Mirror Universe characters. And Voyager is my favorite series. And so I just had to read it and it was pretty good. It was okay. Yeah. I don't know.
It's just one little one shot.
One little one shot. But it was,
you know, they couldn't do a Mirror Universe, and they were already over in the Delta Quadrant. They had enough problems.
I know, yeah, right? Yeah.
Very true. So, I mean, speaking of, like, other media, mm-hmm. I guess, the popularity of Star Trek is so much that there are tons and tons of parodies of it as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. So, like, so many parodies. Like,
oh, my gosh.
Apparently, there's been multiple sketches on Saturday Night Live that have both included some of the cast, but also not. Like, John Belushi played Captain Kirk in a skit.
Nice.
I feel like I watched that because for a while there I was trying to watch Saturday Night Live, like, older ones, but, like, you can't get, like, the older ones.
Yeah,
but,
yeah. And then anyways, Shatner was even on and played Captain Kirk in a parody episode of the Enterprise restaurant.
Oh, what? Oh, my God.
That sounds awesome. And so, like, Galaxy Quest.
I was going to say Galaxy Quest, man.
This is like,
yep.
It's like the
one of my favorite parodies of all time.
Of all time, yeah. I listen to a couple of podcasts that are about Star Trek, and oftentimes, like, if you insert Galaxy Quest in the timeline of Star Trek movies, then there's like this theory that every other Star Trek movie is really good, and so it makes that true because Insurrection and
Nemesis
are like fans don't really, I mean, fans, critics, they don't really like any of those. So if you put Galaxy Quest right in the middle, it's like bad, good, bad.
Yep.
Amazing. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, Galaxy Quest is canon.
Yeah.
Yes.
It just happens before Star Trek.
Before Star Trek. Yes. Exactly.
It's like pre-Earth stuff.
Yeah. And if you want, sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say that it's kind of funny because I was thinking about that actually earlier and I was like, that it follows with the Kelvin universe ones because it's good, bad, good.
Yeah.
For me anyways, as a fan of Star Trek.
But, yeah.
I mean, you can't win them all.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
A 50% is pretty decent.
Pretty decent. Yeah.
Yeah, I know critics and fans don't really like Nemesis, but I actually really like Nemesis
I do too.
Myself.
I mean,
so.
Yeah.
I mean, you're allowed to like what you like. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Nemesis.
Yeah. Oh, and so if you want, also Black Mirror did a parody
episode really?
Of Star what? Trek 2. Yeah.
Oh my God.
I haven't watched it yet, but it's really dark.
Okay.
Yeah. It looks and sounds really dark though.
I mean, Black Mirror is kind of dark.
It always is dark. Yeah. So
it's not surprising.
Not at all. Yeah. Obviously, like the Orville.
Mm-hmm. Yes, of course.
I don't know if that one's still airing or not, but it's pretty funny. I only watched the first season, but it's actually pretty funny.
Yeah. I feel like also a lot of sci-fi shows have, if not like parody episodes, they at least have a lot of callbacks to Star Trek stuff. Mm-hmm. Like,
absolutely.
Yeah. It's one of the most popular and well-known sci-fi series in existence. Mm-hmm. It makes sense that
you would be hard pressed to not find influences of it in other science sci-fi. I think
I always feel like Captain America in the Avengers movie where he's like, "I got that reference." Like every time, like even though I haven't watched like Star Trek, I'm involved in the fandom enough that like people make a Star Trek reference, and I'm like, "I got that one."
I got that one. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. So one of the things, so also a lot of fan produced stuff has like films and episodes have been produced, and they were actually Paramount and CBS were actually way open to it until like about 2016 when they've actually started putting more strict guidelines on stuff that is published and produced.
That feels like a lot of people have been doing that since like 2010s, 2016s, which is sad because like fan content can drive your stuff so well. Yes. Like I understand some of it's like, this is our IP and we don't want people like using it and like abusing it. But at the same time, I've seen so much fan content that drives people towards the original IP that it's like, let people make fan stuff.
Yeah.
Let them do it. Mm-hmm. Let them operate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wizards.
Yeah. Yeah. What was that?
What was that?
Coming live from the game cabinet.
So yeah, and you can see it in the publication of books too, because they're much more strict about like canon and storyline and stuff like that. And there's like, you know, to make sure it fits more in line with what they've already produced. A lot of the fan content, like if you want to produce something, you can, but it has to be less than 15 minutes and it has to cost less than $50,000 in order to produce it. And so, yeah.
Let people spend their money.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So,
man, what am I going to do if I'm ever an eccentric billionaire? I want to make.
I know, right?
Seriously.
Yeah. Season two of Firefly.
If I ever become an eccentric billionaire, I will fund season two of Firefly 100%.
Yes.
Yes.
I'm just, and that's what I'm going to do with my ill-gotten gains. I'm just going to start bringing back all the shows that got canceled over the years. Yes, I'm going to be like, no, I have enough money to do this. We're doing this.
I don't care.
Yes, yes.
Speaking of the more strict things about it, it's kind of sad also because the entire thing that I've ever heard of, like when I first started trying to get into reading published books of Star Trek, was that Star Trek, everything is canon in Star Trek novels, TV, movies, unless it is contradicted.
Contradictory?
Yeah. By something in the show. So the show was the original thing. So even if something happens in a movie and then they contradict it in the show, that's no longer canon in the movie. If they do something in a book and then it's contradicted by something in a show, it's no longer canon.
That seems weird. Like, that seems like a weird choice to me.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Yeah.
But in that vein, like, just let people write whatever they want because it's fun. Like, you would never have that weird, interesting Klingon version if they didn't let that author publish a book about him, you know?
Just let people write whatever they want, and then you can make you can add a stipulation that all books have to be published with, like, a disclaimer in the front that's like, this isn't canon Star Trek.
Yeah.
Right.
Just do that.
I mean,
Like, stop trying to limit people. They can produce fan films for several $1 billion, and then at the beginning, it can be like, nothing in this film is canon in the Star Trek universe. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
Exactly. I'll come on and do your voiceovers for you.
Wonderful.
Exactly. Yeah. This production is a fan production of the Star Trek universe. Nothing seen on the screen is canon.
Yes.
Perfect. Yeah. Just a little disclaimer. Yeah.
I know. It was so weird to me when I heard that about this, even the movie thing, because the movies, this is probably not true now, but it was like when First Contact was made, they created Admiral Janeway as a character in that movie because they did not have rights to Captain Janeway because it was still being produced on television.
So weird copyright stuff between Paramount, who made the movies, versus CBS, who made the shows. The show.
Like, it was a weird thing. It's very,
I feel like a lot of this just comes down to the fact that it was originally published in the 60s.
Yeah.
And then people were like, this isn't going to be popular. And then, like, it almost died. And then the fans were like, no, it is going to be popular. And then, like, a bunch of people were like, well, I guess we can put some money into this. And so now, like, 6 people have the copyrights for different stuff.
Yeah,
and it's just like,
exactly.
Y'all should cooperate with each other.
Yeah.
I think all of you need to sit down and have a meeting.
Yes.
Okay, I did find one thing that I thought was hilarious. So in August of 2010, members of the IRS created a Star Trek themed training video for one of their conferences.
God.
Okay. And then this spoof, along with other parodies of other media franchises that they made, were used, they were cited as proof of the misuse of taxpayer funds in a 2013 congressional investigation.
Hi, if anybody in the U.S. government is listening to this tiny little local podcast, I want you to know that nothing makes me happier than the fact that my tax dollars went to a Star Trek spoof for the FBI. That is the exact way that you should spend my tax money. I want nothing more than that, to be
right.
Okay.
God, so good.
Like, I don't care. Stop funding war, start funding spoofs. That's what I'm
exactly
saying.
Yes. Yes.
Do you know how much better a place the world would be if every company had a training video that was like some kind of pop culture spoof?
Right?
Oh my God. I would actually pay attention to the training videos if that was the case.
Oh, exactly, exactly.
I want to see that video.
Right? So much.
So bad, yeah. And then another fun tidbit that I had no idea about was Nichelle Nichols. I'm sure a lot of people already know about this, but she was thinking of leaving the show at a certain point, and I'm not really sure what her reasonings were for leaving the show. I'm sure she had valid ones. But then she met with Dr. Martin Luther King, and he was like, you can't. And so she stayed on the show. She's like, he was like, you can't. You're making history right now. And so then she stayed on the show.
Yeah.
But she became just an icon.
Exactly. Just
Michelle. It's great.
And then, so after that, I didn't know this, she actually worked for NASA.
Oh.
Basically, as a way to bring in, where they just help out.
Like a liaison?
Like a consultant. Okay. A consultant, that's what I was trying to think of. To get more women and people of color into NASA.
Okay.
And so she worked for almost 10 years on that as a project. She was credited with bringing in the first non-white and women into NASA.
She's just a legend,
right?
Man. Like the original goat. Come on.
Yeah.
BTW, she was leaving because of the gender pay gap.
Oh, okay.
Oh, hey. I mean, that's a valid reason.
Exactly. Yeah.
Which
Leonard Nimoy. He worked really hard to get to close that gap.
Yeah.
To speak out
for like a
because Litter New Boy is amazing.
Is also a legend.
Like also a legend. I mean, there were so many like just excellent people in that cast.
In that cast. Like, yeah. And you can even the thing about the fan fiction, like fan produced videos and films and stuff, a ton of actors from the shows have appeared in those fan productions also. Like especially like Tim Russ who played Tuvok.
Tuvok.
I thought okay, never mind. Tuvok in Voyager. For some reason, my brain did a short circuit now.
It's the Vulcan names, Tuvok, T'Pol, Spock.
So Tuvok in Voyager, and he played in several fan productions and stuff like that. So I think that's cool, too. Because like even who played Q? Who was the actor that played Q?
Oh, my gosh.
Delancey.
You guys are so much better at celebrities than I am. I'm just like...
Yeah. Okay, John Delancey?
Yes, John Delancey.
Okay, he wrote several Star Trek novels also.
I did not know that. Yeah. How did I not know that?
Yeah.
I also didn't know that, but I'm not surprised about it.
Armin Shimerman wrote a couple of Star Trek novels, who played Quark on Deep Space Nine, and he also wrote a series of fantasy novels.
What?
Yes, it's a trilogy of novels, Merchant of Something. I didn't make notes of it because we weren't talking about fantasy, but he wrote them.
I like it.
Yeah. Far-reachings of Star Trek. It's just it's just in the zeitgeist, you know? It
really is. That's a $20 word right there. Zeitgeist.
Even if you don't know Star Trek, you know Star Trek, you know?
Well, it's so ingrained in, like, all pop culture. Like, even fantasy pop culture will make nods to Star Trek. It just, that's how it works.
Exactly.
It's so ingrained in everything. I'm literally like trying to think of any kind of popular media that I've consumed in the last like 12 years that hasn't had some Star Trek reference. And I can't think of a single one.
Right. Yeah.
Like even my like high fantasy stuff that I like the games I play and stuff like that. All of them have Star Trek references.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. I mean, that's all I have about Star Trek publishing and a few little tidbits that I thought were interesting.
That's all I have 3 pages later.
Yes. I was going to bring up only because I was doing a bunch of research and it doesn't have anything to do with Star Trek, but also Doctor Who.
Oh, Doctor Who.
Because they have so many published, they don't have as many published novels obviously as Star Trek because they I don't know, whatever, but it's like because of their BBC's wiping policy and stuff like that. That's the only way you can get some of the shows.
The novels, some of the old novelizations are the only ways to find those shows. There are some people who've like some of the scripts from the shows still exist and like that kind of stuff. But and that's another one where when Doctor Who first came out, they really didn't think that it was going to be more than 1 or 2 seasons. They were just like oh, it's a funny little time traveling story about this weird dude. And then a lot like Star Trek, the fan base was like, no, you can't let this die. We are obsessed. And then it went for so long and then stopped. And then what? It was, I don't remember how long it was between the last Doctor and then the new iterations, but it was a long time.
It was a long time. It was like sometime in the 80s was the last episode of Doctor Who.
Yeah.
The original one. And then 2005 was when
the new one started. So it like,
I don't remember exactly, but so that's like
20 years at least.
Yeah, at least 20 years. I was man, it was a long time. And now it's like majorly popular again.
Yeah.
That's the interesting thing about a lot of British televisions too, because like I love Red Dwarf, so good. But like they also went on hiatus for almost 10 years before like doing their 10th season, I think.
Yeah.
Like, and sometimes they would do, they'd do like 8 episodes and then it would be like 2 years and then they'd do 8 episodes more and then they would do 8 episodes the next year. But then, I don't know, it was like very intermittent. So it's probably why it doesn't have like a huge fan base, but it's a really funny little sci-fi show about a guy who gets frozen in time and then wakes up on his ship that's completely empty because he's the only one that survived for like 1,000 years.
I should watch this show. Yeah. I feel like I should watch Red Dwarf now. Yeah, yeah. You've sold me on it. Sounds horrifying.
It's so good. It's so good. Because so he's there alone for, this happens in the first episode, but I'm going to get you even more. Because so it's like 10,000 years in the future or something. And he was in like cold storage, you know, or whatever. And so he wakes up and he finds this other being on the on the ship with him. And it turns out that it's like the great, 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 great ancestor of his cat that was also on the ship.
Oh my god.
But now it's like a sentient being.
Oh my god. I mean, give cats long enough.
Yep. Yep.
Give them time.
Yep.
They only lack thumbs.
Yep.
It's true. It's so good. It's so good. And so he good. Just, the actor who plays the cat, he acts just like a cat too. Yep. Still. He's just also a sentient humanoid.
Yep. Gosh. Is he just dressed like an actor from Cats?
Don't we wish?
No, don't we? No. But he's always very like suave. He's like wearing suits and ties all the time, and he's like got a pompadour kind of thing going on with his hair. And
so he just looks like a human. But yep. he's actually.
Okay, he's got like a little bit more prominent like canine teeth in his mouth.
And I think he's got pointed ears a little bit.
Maybe
I think.
Could be.
Oh my gosh. I'm kind of disappointed that he's not just like dressed up like an actor from Cats, but like.
I mean,
they had a limited budget back then, you know.
So did Cats.
I mean, true. Yes.
Fair. Okay.
Listen, it just takes a leotard and some face paint.
I mean, mm-hmm.
Yeah, so
you
good.
Just glue the so whiskers good. Directly on.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Oh my gosh, yeah.
I don't know. Closing remarks about sci-fi? Anything else that we want to talk about? We got about 10 minutes.
Oh, I guess. So we mentioned a little bit of Firefly. Mm-hmm. We didn't go as much into it, obviously, because we were talking about Star Trek. But they have a series of novels. I think we talked about this on our last episode because I got a gift
for
Christmas.
Yeah.
That was one of them. But if you want continuing adventures of our favorite crew of misfits, they have a novelization. It's like got 7 books in it so far.
Yeah. I think they also have graphic novels.
Probably. Yes. Oh, there's even like the all new verse, like comic book series that's out. That's really good. And yeah.
I mean, honestly, any sci-fi pretty much that exists that, mm-hmm. that has TVs and books also has a graphic novel version.
I'm sure. Yeah.
At this point, whether it's horror like Alien or, you know, feel good like Farscape, everybody has.
Everybody has one. Yeah.
Has one. At least one.
Yeah, at least
everybody
one. Yeah.
Everybody gets one. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like sci-fi is just. I feel like this was the best place to start for this kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. Because there's just so much of it.
There's just so much. Like we had talked about it when we had talked about doing sci-fi for our first episode. Mm-hmm. We could do 4 episodes on sci-fi.
I think so. Oh, my gosh.
And never run out of things to talk about.
No. Absolutely.
I mean, we filled an entire episode with Star Trek, and there's probably like way more to talk about.
I'm sure.
Yeah. I'm
but so much more.
Yeah.
I mean, we could do an entire episode just on fan fiction of Star Trek.
Right, like, really?
Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh my gosh. So.
Book clubs.
So, I know what it is now.
Okay.
Our adult book club, the OG original book club, underground book club, is The Kaiju Preservation Society by John Scalzi.
Nice.
And the YA book club is The Hunger Games by Suzanne Collins.
Oh, hey.
Oh,
yeah.
What? Nice.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Nice. I like it.
That's good. Yeah.
And you guys meet on the...
We meet on the first Friday of the month, which this is... I think it actually is the 3rd of March.
Okay.
I'm going to double check that really quick because...
Time has no meaning to me. I don't...
Yes. It is the 3rd of March. So
3rd of March.
The Underground Book Club meets at 7 and the YA edition meets at 6:30
cool.
p.m.
Cool. I love it.
I guess before we go too far, so we're ending the episode, have you been reading anything recently?
Oh, hey.
I liked that. I finally started the book Two Tiny Claws.
Ooh. What's that about?
It is a weird Western, I guess, is the only way I can describe it, because it's about an archaeological team that's going out into Montana to try to dig up dinosaur bones.
Okay.
I'm only like 2 chapters in. There's already aliens and like living dinosaurs wandering around and gunfights and
this stuff, sounds like
so.
An Indiana Jones novel is what this sounds
yeah.
like.
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah. So the front cover of it is a cowboy and he's riding a Tyrannosaurus Rex. So
that's amazing. I'm so here for this. Yes. Love that. What about
I think I mentioned that book. Sorry.
No, you're good.
I think I mentioned it on an episode of this podcast a long time ago when I bought it because I found it on the shelf and I was immediately to buy this.
I think you did mention it like a year ago.
Well, I finally started it.
Okay. When I like just go back through all of our episodes. I'm not going to do that. That's way too much time.
Too much work.
Are you reading anything,
Liz? Let's see. I'm reading a bunch of stuff. I'm going to say, because I did just finish the third book of that Rahansu series, which is five books. And I was very annoyed because when I got to the end of Sword Hunt, it was a cliffhanger. And I have now, I still haven't started Honor Blade, but apparently it was supposed to be one novel, but then the publishers decided to split it in two. So, you know, there's that.
Boo.
But
at least you have. At least you didn't have to like wait for the second one to come out.
Yeah.
That would make me even more angry. I'm still kind of just hovering, trying to get started on the second book of the Murderbot series. I've had a lot of stuff going on, so it's been very difficult to read anything. But like, I have it in my bag.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm going to read it.
That count, because I've been carrying around, what was that book? Heart of the Briar. I started reading that one and then I haven't finished it.
I absolutely just devoured the first book in the Murderbot series. It was so good and I want to read the second one so bad. I just have to sit, make time to read it when I can fully invest in the absolute silly antics that is Murderbot.
Yes. Nice. Listened to part of that book. It's so good and I need to finish it.
It's so good. I was very impressed with the writing style, and I was very impressed with the story. It was engaging and fast and fun.
Oh, cool. I also did start reading a graphic novel called Sarah, which is about Russian snipers.
Ooh.
During World War II, I believe.
Okay.
And Sarah is like one of the lady soldiers who's a sniper.
They're nice. They're nice. I think I saw that one come through at one point.
And it's also like the binding on it is gorgeous. Mm-hmm. It is so beautiful. It's a hardcover. I got it for Christmas from Leah. And it's got like a cutout on the front that's really cool. And so then it's got her face in there. And then when you open it up, it's like her like set up in a tree, like ready to snipe people. And then they did tinted edges on the comic. So like the cover is red and then the edges of the pages are also red, tinted red, and so pretty.
I love painted edges. Yes. And I wish that was just something that everybody did. Like,
it's just they got it. I mean, it used to be like, it kind of seemed like there's like an era of time, like sometimes you can tell like that where paperbacks that were published in the 70s, where they just all have blue painted edges, edges, and it's just like, please go back to doing that with every book.
Please just do that with every book. Like when you design your book cover and you spend all this time making your book cover just look stunning, just be like, what color edges of my pages would look excellent with this?
Yes.
Black, purple, teal.
Right?
Like, there's so many choices.
So many. And yes.
Yeah. I will pay extra money for your book if it's got painted pages.
I don't even need gilded ones. They can just be colorful.
They don't have to be metallic. Favorite one that we got in was that Edgar Allan Poe collection, the hardcover one with the purple edges, because the cover the cover was just this beautiful matte and shiny black, like it had it was matte black with like shiny reliefs on it, and then the logo on the front that was, I think it had like a raven and a rose or something, had purple cutouts, and then the edges of the pages were the same color purple as the little accents, and it was so gorgeous.
Just so pretty.
So cool.
I didn't have money at the time, or I would have taken it home with me. But it was, I mean, and it was like the color purple that my cup is, which the listeners can't see, but it's a very nice purple.
It's a very nice purple,
I mean, that's the reason why I have two copies of Wicked, is because I found a paperback that had the green edges, which they don't no longer do when they're publishing the Wicked.
Right? just paint your edges, man.
Paint the edges of the pages.
Paint the edges of the pages. I'm sure it costs a lot of money.
I know. I don't even know.
I'm just like, man, if I ever publish a book, I'm painting the edges. I don't care how much extra money it costs. I'm doing it. I say, and then it's going to be like $3,000. And I'm going to be like, you know, I don't need painted. It doesn't need that bad. I'll start a Kickstarter. If you want my book in painted edges, you have to fund my Kickstarter. Right.
Well, this was so much fun.
Yes. Thank you, guys. This was super fun. I'm looking forward to doing more, like, not deep dives on genres, but deep dives on ideas and pop culture and stuff like that. It's going to be interesting.
I'm not 100% sure what our next episode will be about, but
that's all right. We'll figure it out.
That out in time, and then
we got a month.
Exactly. So, all right. Thanks for listening.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye.
You've been listening to The Word Warren on AU Radio Podcast Network. If you're interested in any of the titles from today's episode, you can check out the link tree in the description to visit Adventure Underground at their online store, or their virtual storefronts hosted by bookshop.org and libro.fm. Physical, digital, or audio, Adventures Underground has you covered. If you'd like to contact the show, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Just check out that link tree in the description. Or you can email the show at podcast@advunderground.com. You can also support this show and all the awesome shows on AU Radio that you love by becoming a patron of the AU Radio Podcast Network. You can find us at patreon.com/ADV Underground. For as little as $1 a month, you can help us continue to create these shows, and soon, many more.
You've been listening to the AU Radio Podcast Network. Music is provided by CubbyPurplePlanet.com and BenSound.com. Views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Adventures Underground. AU Radio is a production of Adventures Underground. Copyright 2018. All rights reserved.